There's a new poll that shows teachers are becoming more frustrated with their profession. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The poll was conducted by PDK, that's the public's attitude toward public schools. In it, they found that more than half of teachers surveyed have considered leaving the profession in the past few years. And many of the concerns include teacher evaluations, low pay, administrative disrespect, and belligerent students. Florida is regularly ranked near the bottom when it comes to teacher pay. And in some parts of the state, there are classrooms run by temporary teachers because there's a major shortage. With school starting next week, we've brought together a group of teachers from across South Florida to share their stories. And if you're a teacher or recently left your job, share with us on Facebook or Twitter or email what you see as the biggest problems facing the profession. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, summer is just about over for thousands of kids and teachers, but as everyone is gearing back up for the new term, there will be some teachers who are not coming back. Some have retired. Others have quit. Like Jonathan Carroll in Lake County, Florida. He was a teacher for 20 years, but he decided, that's it, I'm out. He couldn't take it anymore. Today on Sundial, we're talking with teachers from across South Florida about the profession of teaching. If you're a teacher or a former Florida teacher, reach out to us. Maybe you're a parent concerned about your child's school. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And we've started a chat on both, and you can share your thoughts there. Or if you prefer, email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. We're joined today by a wonderful panel of teachers across our listening region, starting from north to south. I've got Ellen Baker, who's in her 19th year at William Dyer High School teaching special education. She joins us from the studios of WXEL. Ellen, great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I also have Sarah Lerner. She is in her 6th year teaching English at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. She edited the book Parkland Speaks, which is a collection of stories from students and faculty following the tragedy there. She's joining us from her classroom in Parkland. Sarah, great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining me here in studio is Sarah Maldonado, who's been teaching for 6 years. She's currently a science and writing teacher at Beacon College Prep in Opa-locka. She's here again with me in the studio. Sarah, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Feel free to call me Miss M.
Oh, Miss M. All right. I'm already feeling like I'm back in school. Just don't give me a pop quiz. Okay, that's all I ask. And finally, from the studios of Key West, math teacher Marjorie Rodriguez, in her 37th year at Key West High School, also the head of the math and science program at the school. Marjorie, great to have you.
Thank you so much. And I'm the math program manager, not science.
Math program manager. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. Well, I want to start with this because I mentioned a Mr. Carroll. And maybe you've seen his letter. He was very public about this when he decided to leave the teaching profession this past year. After 20 years, I'm going to read a little bit of what he said. He said, quote, "I think of what I thought I would be doing as a teacher, opening minds, debating history, inspiring the next generation to reach higher and learn from the past. But education has become something else. I think of all the things I did not sign up for. I am leaving the field of education. I've had so many wonderful memories, but it has become a toxic profession. Knowing where it is safe to hide in my classroom, feeding and clothing my students, buying my own supplies, being told that if a student fails, it's my fault, not their fault." Okay, this is part of his letter, by the way, and he pointed out some of the things that, some of the reasons why he left, and we'll talk about those throughout the hour. He said a lot that there's to cover here. Ellen, let me start with you. Is Mr. Carroll right, or did he go too far?
Unfortunately, he is right. That it just makes me really sad to hear what he has to say, because teaching is a noble profession, and we, you know, everybody has a teacher that they can remember. When you sign into a computer, there's what was the name of your third grade teacher. We have such a great impact, but the way that it's going, it does make it way more difficult to stay.
You think about this. I mean, he after 20 years, he said he's done. And you've almost put in 20 years now, right?
Yes.
I mean, have you ever felt any of that inkling of, I got to get out of this?
Yes, and I still feel it. I'm just trying to. The $10,000 referendum made a lot of people stay in Palm Beach County. And you know, most of us feel like we earned it because we had our pay stagnant for so long. So that is unfortunately or fortunately a reason to try to stick with it.
Marjorie, you have been teaching the longest in this group. What's kept you coming back?
Oh, it's definitely the students. There's a connection there between teacher and students. It's unbreakable. You know, you go in wanting to see success, and when they reach that goal, yeah, there's no better feeling. However, things have changed greatly, and I think we've lost a lot of the humanistic approach to education that we once started with back when I started. We look at a lot of test data, and as Mr. Carroll was saying, it's become toxic in the event that we're not looking at the whole child. We're looking at a lot of spreadsheets of data, where they are, where we need to take them. There's a lot more to that child than just data.
So what keeps you coming back, though?
I love the kids. I love the classroom. I care. I feel like there's a lot of promise in every child. I look for the best, and I find a rapport, and we seem to get along well, and there's a mutual respect. It's a wonderful work day. It's a wonderful work environment to work with kids who just seem to want to learn and just need that help, and we're able to give it to them.
Sarah Lerner, according to the Department of Education, almost half of teachers leave within 5 years of starting. So you, you're now in your sixth year, right?
No, I'm in my sixth year at Stoneman Douglas.
Oh,
this
okay.
will be my 18th year of teaching.
Thank you for clearing that up. I appreciate
sure.
that. You know what? I mean, you think about that, though, and I come back to Mr. Carroll. After 20 years, he throws his hands up and decides, I can't do this anymore. And again, he calls the profession toxic. For you, I mean, you know, what do you think when you hear that word, that toxic?
It makes me very sad because I don't see education as being toxic. I think there are fundamental things that need to change within the field of education, but that's stuff that starts at the top. And when you have a, you know, Secretary of Education who has never attended nor taught in a public school, how can education change when policies are being made by people who don't fully understand what it is that we do every day?
Sarah Maldonado, you have only been teaching for 6 years now,
yes.
Right? Okay, I want to get that right. Thank you. Your thought on this idea, though, as I had mentioned before, usually at the five-year mark, people, almost half of teachers decide, I don't want to do this. So what kept you sticking around?
The kids. It's always the kids. I mean, I cannot imagine this profession without having someone to service. Education is centered around people. We're here to essentially do one thing, and that's to support and teach our kids, and I love them. And I agree with the other teachers. We build these relationships with them that really and truly last. It's not something that we just say. I have taught kids 3 years ago that I still keep in contact today, that I see outside of school during summer. If they need anything, if the families need anything, they always reach out. It goes back to that impact that I originally wanted to make. And even though on the day-to-day, in those 180 days of school, you may not see or feel that impact, there just comes a point after every year that I'm just like, wow, that feeling of I'm doing something important for each and every child that's passed through my classroom or through my school.
Again, we're talking with teachers today. We're going to spend the whole hour talking about the teaching profession, and we want to hear from you if you're a teacher. I know that school is starting up pretty soon, and a lot of teachers are actually getting back in the classroom as they do that, you know, prep work to get the curriculum ready, to get the classroom ready. Maybe you have a moment. You could share with us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Find us on email if you prefer that. Email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. Let us know your thoughts of the teaching profession. Has it become toxic? Do you want to get out? What keeps you going? Is it the kids? How do you keep going with all of these challenges? And what are the biggest challenges for teachers? Ellen, I'm curious about what attracted you to the profession in the first place.
My little brother was... I took time off from while I was in college, and my little brother needed speech therapy. He didn't speak until he was four. And I'm one of eight. I'm the second oldest of eight. So I think that I always wanted to be with people in my job. I went in the Peace Corps. I taught overseas and then raised my children and went back to work as a 40-something-year-old. And it's just really to make a difference.
But you think about, you know, how long you've been teaching now. Can you point to one or two things that have changed drastically over those, you know, almost 20 years?
Well, certainly the fear of being safe and keeping your students safe, that's very different. And the evaluation, the fact that we have our new teachers coming in, our annual contract teachers, so they have no job security.
Yeah.
So I would say those things are.
Marjorie, how about for you and all the years you've been teaching? What? How much has it changed?
Holy smokes. When I first started back in the 1900s AD, I can tell you I taught in a classroom with no air conditioning, not even a ceiling fan. We had two box fans, one oscillated. I had no telephone, certainly no computer. The students had no access to technology. It has come full circle, and I see a more inviting environment for the students, but I do see now the high level of safety. Our district has implemented a great deal of safety plans. It's become the topic on every meeting agenda. And, you know, that constant feeling of fear that something could happen.
That's something else, though. I'm wondering for you. Yeah, as you got into school back, and I remember growing up as a kid in the 70s and 80s, there were no shooter drills. There were fire drills, but there were no shooter drills. There was never a fear of that. And that's now the norm. How does that change teaching for you?
Oh, drastically. First of all, the drills, the conversations, the PowerPoints, the time it takes from class, just to talk about the practicality of it, it takes a lot of time away from curriculum. But it's necessary, unfortunately, in this time, at this time of our lives. But also, it takes a lot of money. You know, there's been a lot of updating in schools to make our schools safer. We have a long way to go, but a lot of meeting time, a lot of administrative time taken out to try to figure out how we're going to make students and staff safe. We've got a climb ahead of us, but it has certainly taken its toll. And it's sad that we have to be in a classroom and be thinking. We train our students. Think if something were to happen in this school or even out in a restaurant at a movie theater, how would you get out? And people have to think of that nowadays.
That is kind of frightening. I'm going to talk about safety and security, though, in a little bit, because I know these are some of the points that, again, Mr. Jonathan Carroll pointed out in his letter as he exited the teaching profession. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. Sarah Maldonado, real quickly, you work primarily with low-income communities.
Yes.
Liberty City, Opa-locka, and Overtown. And aside from teaching, you're providing kids just basic, necessary things, services outside of the classroom, like what?
So in the past, I've had students that need help doing their hair, if it's deodorant that they need. Sometimes they don't have clean clothes. I might lend them a sweater. So my classroom is typically really, really cold, and I don't have control over it. And I have had students that come in, 3 months in a row, just not being able to cover themselves properly because they're so cold. And so I've literally taken off my sweater.
I've heard of teachers who have to, a lot of teachers who have to buy their own supplies, but you're telling me you've got to help these kids with clothes, deodorants, hair products, things like that. Really?
Yeah. So, I disagree with saying have to. I do it because I want to.
Right. No,
and
I
if
understand.
I see a need and I know that the parents are struggling for whatever reason, I don't honestly feel like it's an issue of neglect. It's just some of these kids are coming in with things that they don't have. And if I can provide that to them, I will.
Have you also had to give rides to students?
I have.
At times?
Mm-hmm.
Does the school reimburse you for any of this?
Mm-mm. And to be honest, I rarely, rarely ever ask. I only ask for reimbursement for programs that I use in the classroom, but I know that there's also no budget for it.
Is this a case, I want to hear from everybody, is this a case you have to buy your own supplies, and how often are you going out of pocket to even get other little things to help your kids? Anybody please chime in on this.
Yeah, this is Sarah Lerner.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to buy school supplies every year. And as soon as the school supplies are out in the store, you know, my heart drops because that means school's almost back. But yeah, I have to buy folders. I have to buy board markers. I have to buy all of those things for my own classroom on top of getting things. I have two children in public school and I have to get their school supplies too. So I'm buying school supplies for the three of us. And, you know, it really starts to add up after a while.
And again, the school, no reimbursement from the school on this?
We get reimbursement from the county. It's called LEAD money, LEAD. And we get that, it's usually in September. And we have to, it wasn't this way for a very long time. And now the policy has changed that we have to document every single penny that we have spent of that LEAD money. And however much it is, $250, $300, whatever the county determines for the school year, if we have not spent all of that money as documented by the provided receipts, we have to pay it back to the district.
Sarah Maldonado, you want to say something?
Yeah, we also get money. I think it's around 250, somewhere between 200 and 300. It's changed throughout the years. But there are some supplies that you need to get ahead of time. And you don't know whether or not it's going to be covered by the time they do give you that reimbursement. And like she said, you do have to cover it. But also there are supplies that I would get as a teacher that doesn't necessarily fall under the appropriate list of supplies. What about technology that you need? Like I said, sometimes I get hair stuff. Sometimes I get deodorant. That's not covered. And then you go to do your taxes later on in the year and it's the same 200 amount. I've only been teaching for 6 years, and every so often I get changed in subject or grade level. And so that means that the supplies I need changes, and I've probably spent over, and my mom's going to kill me when I say this number, but probably over $2,000 in just my own money, not stuff that has been donated to my classroom.
All right. Real quickly, Ellen or Marjorie, I mean, for you, same thing?
Well, we get $300.
Ellen, yeah, go ahead, Ellen.
We get $300 from the state, and we do have to document it, but it doesn't cover, I buy granola bars, peppermints when they're testing. You know, I don't want anybody to be hungry. So it's sort of expected that we come out of our own pocket to provide things for our students.
Marjorie, it's expected?
I have it different in Monroe County. We get the teacher lead money, and we are also allotted $400 over the summer to buy things for our classroom. And our principal is continually asking, you know, what do we need? How can we help? Don't be shy. Our district office as well. The only problem that I do see is in regards to the food. Food is a great motivator. It's a great reward. Chips, candy, et cetera, a little something. And when you take that $400 and you use it, you cannot use it towards those little pick-me-ups.
Right. You have to use it just for the supplies. I see.
Exactly.
Again, I'm talking with a panel of teachers from across South Florida about the state of their profession. We have Ellen Baker in Palm Beach County, Sarah Lerner in Broward, Sarah Maldonado here in Miami-Dade County, and Marjorie Rodriguez in Monroe County. We're going to take a short break, so stick with us. When we come back, we'll discuss some of the dangers of being a teacher today.
Daddy was quite surprised to find you with the
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. We're talking with South Florida teachers as everyone is gearing up for the upcoming school year. We're talking about the challenges of being a teacher in Florida today. If you're a teacher, a former teacher, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. I've started a chat on Facebook, our Facebook page at WLRN Sundial, asking you what are the challenges, what do you love and what do you hate about teaching? We heard from Meeks at Home Meeks saying, I've retired. Times have changed. There's too much stress and pressure in teaching. Good luck trying to engage young people to go into this beloved profession. That's an interesting point. I want to ask about that as well. We also heard from one of our listeners, Angela Padron, who's been in and out of teaching over the years.
It's not that I'm not passionate about teaching. Every teacher goes into the profession to help children. We know that it's low pay, but over the past few years, ever since No Child Left Behind went into play with high stakes testing, the pressure and the amount of paperwork and responsibilities that are given to us is overwhelming, and we're losing good, young, talented teachers as well as veteran teachers every single day.
All right. Again, I want to hear from teachers. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Tell me, are we losing teachers every single day? Ellen, is Angela right? Are we losing good teachers every single day?
We lost a wonderful teacher to a college up in Maine where she's going to be coaching. And I think there's teachers right now at my school that may not make it through the year. So, yes, I believe that teachers are leaving and finding different professions. We have one that left, and she's a realtor.
And when you say they might not make it through the year, I mean, what do they say? What are the reasons? Why? How much of it is money? How much of it's security? How much of it is they're fed up?
I think it's the fed up part, and I think the frustration, the different populations of teaching is so different because you have the haves and the have-nots, and you have the high-end testing, AP, IB, and those classes where you're able to make extra money on testing. And then you have someone like me who's an ESE teacher who doesn't have that opportunity and has more behavior to deal with than, say, an IB teacher.
Yeah.
So I think it's and the money, I mean, obviously I make $52,093 after, and I'm in my 19th year. So it's certainly not a way to get rich.
Well, and by the way, IB, what do you mean?
Oh, International Baccalaureate.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You know, advanced placement, all those classes carry money per kid that passes a test. So teachers are able to get money from, extra money.
All right. I want to come back to Jonathan Carroll. Again, this is the teacher that I've been pointing to for this entire show. He's a teacher from Lake County who quit after 20 years, and he wrote a letter saying, I've had enough. He called the profession toxic. He gave a number of reasons. Here's two of them. Active shooter drills, arming teachers. He said Parkland students asked Florida legislators not to arm the teachers, and they did anyway. Sarah Lerner, you have the unfortunate distinction of being a teacher on this panel who, you haven't been through the shooter drills alone. You've actually been through this horrible situation yourself.
Yes, I was here on campus that day.
And so after that happened, did you ever question, why am I in this profession if it's this dangerous?
No, not at all. Quite the opposite, actually. When Columbine happened, I was 19 and I was in college. When Sandy Hook happened, I was teaching at a different school and I had a son in first grade. And you always think this will never happen here. This will never happen to me. And, you know, fast forward to 2018 and here I was in the thick of things. And at no point did I ever consider leaving the profession or leaving my school. I love what I do. I love where I do it. And the kids need me. And being here is part of my healing process. And, you know, so, and I told my students this, you know, some days, the fact that I got up, took a shower and came to work, I deserve a gold star for that. I have PTSD. It is very real and, you know, can be debilitating. But if I am not working here, I don't know what I would do.
Sarah, do you feel safe?
I do. And I know that might sound crazy to some of the listeners. I do feel safe. And I have never not felt safe.
But have they changed things around campus to make it safer?
Yes, there are or have been additional things put in place, additional campus security and campus monitors and school resource officers. And they've worked to improve, fencing and things within the school and itself and around the perimeter. And I do feel safe here. And I don't know that I would feel any more safe or less safe if I was at a different school, but the things that I experienced give me a different perspective. And, you know, I would certainly be more aware wherever yeah. I go. And it's just part of what I've been through.
Marjorie, you were talking about security a little while ago. And, your thoughts on not just beefing up security on campus, but this idea of staff or teachers being armed.
That's a double-edged sword. I personally am not a proponent of that. I would not carry a gun in school. However, there are a number of capable people in my district and particularly in my school, administrator, teachers, who could carry a gun, and I would feel a lot safer, I guess, if they did. But across the board, I'm not a proponent.
And I want to remind everyone here, I know we have teachers in many different places, but at any time, if you want to jump in, just introduce yourself real quickly and please let me know, because I'd love to hear from all of you. Ellen, real quickly, I wonder if you've heard from parents, how parents feel about school security and the idea of arming staff and teachers.
Absolutely. And I was with the Parkland kids up in Tallahassee when they testified. I testified myself. My cousin's daughter was killed in Newtown, so I have a little bit of a different perspective. We've also had some weapons found on kids at school. We've had some students that were just part of the big gang arrests that they made in Palm Beach County. So I think I have a little bit of a different perspective. I'm in an older school, so some of the classrooms are very safe. And some are not. Now, we did have parents after Parkland have a big discussion, and they were willing to buy wands and security. They wanted to have the airport security type scanner or whatever they're called to go through. I mean, it makes me cringe to think that this is what we've come to. So, yes, and the parents were told by the district that they weren't able to do that, singularly in a school.
What about that idea? We heard from Parkland students afterwards that they don't want their school to turn into a fortress. But do you think we have to maybe consider that to keep campuses safe?
Well, I prefer that over arming teachers. I'm completely against more guns in schools. I just don't think there's no research that says that makes a building safer. And I think that I think about my grandchildren going to school and doing the drills, that's bad enough. But to think that their teacher has a gun on their person while they're writing on the board or sitting on the floor, reading with them, I just think that is not a good situation.
Sarah Maldonado, just your thoughts real quickly about this idea of school security. And after Parkland, did you ever have doubts? Did you ever think, this isn't safe anymore?
No, but I did know that things were going to change. I had several parents that were very much concerned and wanted to know what the school was going to do to combat or to be proactive about the situation. But I think that the issue on security is important. I think talking about whether or not we want to arm teachers, that discussion is important. I have strong opinions. I don't think teachers should be armed. I'd rather leave that to having police officers on campus to aid in that. But I also think that, you know, the discussion of mental health just went in a direction where people got lost. I think that we need to think about the cause of these school shootings. You know, it's very, we're not talking about teachers or adults that are coming in and doing this. We're talking about students,
right,
or older students, former students. And so what does that mean? What is going on with that child that we're unaware of? It goes beyond mental health. How can we attack mental health proactively? And I honestly feel like that's through teaching social and emotional skills that are going to help you manage and cope. Do you know about mindfulness? Do you know what it feels to be stressed? Do you know how to combat that? You know, starting that at a young age can really make a difference in how these students are taking on, you know, these problems. Because at the end of the day, these kids are little humans, you know, they're people too, and they have feelings, and the actions that they've been taking lately is what's leading to this.
You know, the other thing too, and we've talked about this on the program, is now all schools are going to have to offer up to 6 hours of mental health instruction in the curriculum. And every school district's going to have to come up with their own system and how they're going to do this. So I don't know if that's going to be a class or it's spread out through classes, but you know, this is coming up for the new school year. And, you know, Marjorie, it comes back to something that I heard you say a while ago about this idea of what's changed with education is that we've changed the way we approach students. And, you know, it so much now is on evaluation of students and testing and not spending the time with the kids. As we move forward, you know, and something to what Sarah just mentioned a second ago, as we move forward with students, what is missing that we, you know, we're not connecting with the students that, you know, because if maybe we were, we could spot kids who are in trouble, who might be going down a path. We need to catch them first. Your thoughts?
I think we're so focused on curriculum and curriculum issues and testing, assessment, that we're missing the whole child. But I think there's a piece here that's also missing is the family. And I think we've had a big change, a societal change in the family and their partnership with education. Upper level students, high achieving students have a lot of parental support. And I'm not sure as we get up in the grades, high school level, the kids who aren't performing as well, I'm not sure that they have the background or the support as much because their families are working a lot. They have, you know, other things that are going on, et cetera. I think it's a partnership between the schools and the family. And I think there's a lot of education that needs to come from the schools to the families in parenting and issues. How many times do you go to a restaurant and you see kids that are on their cell phone the entire time? The family dynamic, the communication. It's not just in the classroom. It's a societal issue, in my opinion.
I agree. I agree with your opinion.
Go ahead. Who's speaking? No, go ahead. Who's speaking just now? Oh, Sarah Maldonado, you're right here in front of me. That's right. Go ahead. No, go ahead. You agree.
No, I 100% agree. Society is definitely changing. I cannot say that I've been in the classroom for 20 years, but I can honestly, you know, my parents were working parents, but I was fortunate enough to have supportive family members. So if mom and dad couldn't help me, grandma or grandpa helped me, or aunts and uncles helped me. And that's not the case for my low-income students.
All right, I got to take a break, but you both have said something very interesting about family. So I'm going to come back to that in a second. Emily did tweet us. She said, I miss my students, but I couldn't afford to live in South Florida anymore. I now work in assistive technology and make considerably more. I know I'm still making a difference for my students, but as I neared 30, I realized that this wasn't a sustainable career. Also, Susan Edgar Lee from Boynton Beach messaged us on Facebook. I'm sad for Jonathan Carroll, but it sounds like it was time for a change for him. I respect that he had the guts to confront his feelings and not give in to retirement insecurity. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Let us know what you think. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk more with our panel of teachers here on Sundial.
Repeat after me. An acre is the area of a rectangle whose length is not for more and whose width is one trade.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Again, we're talking with teachers today. As school is about to start, it's just a couple of weeks away for many students here in South Florida. And we're asking people, teachers, former teachers, what are the challenges that you face in the classroom today? What do you love about the profession? What do you not like about the profession? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial, or email us sundial@wlrnnews.org. We did hear from JR, who texted us from Miami. My mother was a career teacher for 33 years in Miami-Dade. The majority is a math teacher. I remember how she was always up at 5:30 and usually not home till 5 or 6. In the latter years, her pay was cut a few times and it was barely enough to make ends meet. Teaching is a profession one does. You don't choose to do it for the money, though. Something that I heard just a second ago from a couple of you on parents. And so let me come to parents here, and I'm going to challenge them a little bit on this. But Sarah Maldonado, you're saying that, you know, there's something missing perhaps at home. Again, you teach in a unique place, though. You deal with students who do have a lot of challenges socioeconomically. But do you talk to the parents?
Yeah, all the time.
About these things? Okay, wait, so how do you approach them? What do you say to them?
So it all goes back to the beginning of the year and how I start the year. And so I call them, I talk to them, I introduce myself. And a lot of times it's not like your child did this or accomplished this. It's like, what can I do to help you? Because curriculum's changing, expectations are changing. And so you almost have to teach the parents and teach the kids sometimes. And, you know, I had talked about social and emotional learning. Like, this is for both parents and their kids, because at the end of the day, sometimes they're not going to be able to help with their homework. They're not going to be able to be at home to make them dinner. Some of my kids do it themselves. And so what tools can I give parents, or what tools can my school give to help their kids?
Marjorie, for you, you also talked about parents. Do you ever talk to parents? Do you ever tell them, hey, what's the role you play in all this?
I'm not quite that blunt about it, but yes, I do talk to parents, and I'm so glad you asked me that question, because I feel very strongly that parents now, presently, they had a different curriculum when they came through. I'll be totally frank. A lot of them took Basic Math 1, Basic Math 2, Consumer Math. They had 3 maths, and they were in and out. Now every child takes Algebra 1 and must pass a state exam and pass the course, through geometry, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think the parents understand the amount of work it takes now to pass Algebra 1 and the Algebra 1 end of course exam, the state exam. It takes a lot of grit, and a lot of the kids are not quite prepared as they come to us to pass an Algebra 1 exam, and it's an uphill climb. These kids need support. They need a place to study. They need a time to study. You know, The lack of home knowledge about what it takes has definitely shifted, and I think we have to educate these parents on the rigors of high school math.
Yeah. Again, I want to come back to Mr. Jonathan Carroll one last time here. A couple of other things that he listed in his goodbye letter as to reasons why he left the profession after 20 years. Standardized testing, that is the be-all, end-all barometer of student success. And micromanaging administrators. He listed a couple other things, but I just wanted to point out a couple of these. We heard from Max Lundy, who tweeted us, bottom line, the teaching profession is not respected in this country, and the disrespect starts with our government. Look at teacher salaries. Teaching professionals should not be carrying weapons, period. Less guns is the solution, not more of them. He hits on a couple of things here. I want to focus this last segment, though, on teacher pay. We've heard this. Sarah Lerner, you know, again, the ability to be a teacher in South Florida, this is a very expensive place to live. And I did hear from one of you actually saying your salary had not jumped so much in all of these years. But Sarah Lerner, for you, how big a role does this play?
I mean, I definitely didn't get into this for the money. Thankfully, my husband is not a teacher. So, you know, we're not living on 2 teacher salaries. But what I bring home is not enough to live on. You know, I have 2 children. If I was a single woman, that might be a different story. But with a family of 4, it's not. I don't make enough. So I do other things. I'm the yearbook advisor, so I get whatever supplement I get for that. And I, you know, there are teachers who have 2 and 3 jobs in order to make ends meet. And
wait
the fact
a minute, how do you do that? How do you do that if you're spending all the day and you're getting, there's so much to do as a teacher?
There are teachers who work on the weekends, who work at night. There are teachers who tutor. I mean, there are lots of different things that you can do. But, you know, I know of several teachers who bartend and tutor. And that's their, you know, second and third job because they don't make enough in the classroom.
Ellen, how do you encourage future generations to want to go into teaching?
Well, first, I just want to say I ran into a bartender that quit teaching and makes double and works way less. So I totally agree that this is not the profession that's you're going to get rich on. I think you have to have a passion, and I think that fortunately there are still going to be those idealistic people like most of us were. Thinking that you can make a difference, and so they'll still go into the profession.
I keep hearing that it's. I keep hearing the same thing from teachers. It's one, it's the kids, and two, it's this passion. But I think to myself, you know, if you're struggling to make ends meet, I mean, how long can that passion last before it fizzles out, and you're like, okay, I can't do that anymore.
Well, I work 2 jobs to put 3 kids through college. So, you know, my teaching was important because it was the bulk of my, you know, my income. But I never thought in those days of leaving. The hours were convenient. I absolutely loved my school, my students. And so I stayed. Now it's a little bit different.
And you know, the other thing you mentioned, too, is that in Palm Beach County, teachers got a big bump recently.
Correct. $10,000 for the next 4 years if you have over, I think it's 10 years of experience, and then it goes to $5,000, and then it goes to $1,000.
Does anyone here know, like, what's the best state for pay for teachers? And I'm just curious if anybody here has ever thought of leaving.
Alaska.
Yeah.
Last I checked, it was Alaska. I think they make like 60.
Sarah Maldonado's telling me Alaska. Anybody else on the panel, have you heard of, or have you ever thought of moving to another state because maybe the pay is a little bit better?
This is Sarah Lerner. I have not considered moving to another state, but I don't have my master's degree. And in a lot of states, you have to in order to teach. So if I, even with, you know, this being my 18th year of teaching, if I were to move to another state, I don't even know if I would be able to teach because once I got my bachelor's and I graduated from college, I immediately started teaching.
You know, something that we did hear a little while ago from one of our listeners online is, again, about students. And Mr. Carroll brought this up as well, that something has changed with the kids. But Marjorie, you've been teaching the longest. Is that the case? Do you see something different about kids today?
Oh, yeah, I definitely do.
Good or bad? Is that good or bad?
There's some great things. They're very attuned to, I would say, current events. You know, they're constantly on their phone. They have some conversations that just floor me. I learn from them. They're very politically involved. They have a lot of opinions. I worry about their communication skills because they are texting a lot. They're not face-to-face communicating as much. And that's where the schools are going to pick it up with more collaborative opportunities for kids in the classroom. I don't know. I have a good rapport with my kids. I treat them respectfully, and they in return respect me. So I don't see a lot of discipline problems, you know, that have changed in that respect. It kind of is a roller coaster. Some years are better than others.
Yeah.
But I want to say one last thing. We were talking about teacher pay.
Yes.
And being someone at the end of the road or close to it, my concern in regards to salary is, are we taking care of people for longevity? We need to be giving teachers increases in pay. I'm not saying a first-year teacher is not a great teacher, But you really learn in the classroom by experience. And the more experience you get in the classroom, the more valuable you are to a school, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I just think we need to look at retirement and pay increases and things that would motivate teachers to stick it out for the long haul.
So that's what you'd like to see for the future. And as I wrap up today's program, I wanted to ask each of you what you see for the future of education in Florida in the coming years. So Marjorie, for you briefly, what do you think is going to happen?
I think we're on a pendulum swing. I think you're going to see things come full circle. I think we've lost a lot of our vocational courses, and they're now coming back around. I think we're learning that our students need other avenues besides college preparatory. We need some real-life experiences and some career education.
Ellen, what do you see as the future of teaching in Florida? What are you hopeful for? What are you scared of?
Well, I agree that the vocational education that's coming back is a positive thing, and that college isn't for everyone. My concern is more political, and the vouchers, and you know, we give $1 billion in vouchers. And I think that taking away from traditional public schools, the charter movement and vouchers is on its way to destroy public education. So that's what I'm most afraid of.
Yeah. Is Sarah Lerner, for you, what do you hope to see coming in the future?
I hope that there is more support and better policies that come down from the district, the state, and the federal government. And I hope that they will ask current teachers for input and feedback, and not just people who are lining their pockets, and really listen to what those of us in the trenches need and want to be able to facilitate this public school system.
And Sarah Maldonado, what about you?
I'm just hoping that we start educating the whole child and really and truly taking care of teachers and making sure that they can, at the very least, make ends meet.
We heard from one of our listeners saying that the teaching profession is not respected. Do you feel respected?
I feel respected by my school, by my administrators, not necessarily those that come from way above us. So no, I don't feel respected by the government. Sometimes I don't feel respected by even the state.
And what do you want it to, if you get the chance right now, what would you tell parents?
I would tell parents to communicate as much as possible with teachers and build that relationship.
Real quickly, Marjorie, what would you tell parents?
I would tell them to get involved. Get involved in their students' education, get involved with them in their personal life, talk to their children, communicate, love their children, you know, make their educational and their home life a wonderful experience.
Sarah Lerner, you're talking to them right now. What are you going to say?
I mean, I echo the other teachers' feelings. You know, it's important to be involved in your children's education. That doesn't mean being a helicopter parent, but it means asking questions and showing an active interest in what your children are doing.
Mm-hmm. And Ellen?
Spend time with them and listen. The students want somebody to listen to them, and they're not getting it always at home, and teachers don't always have the time, and the more that we are expected to do that, you know, besides teaching, takes away from that time. But I really see that teenagers want to be listened to, and so that's what I would encourage parents to do.
We had a great panel of teachers today. We heard from Ellen Baker in Palm Beach County, Sarah Lerner in Broward County, Sarah Maldonado in Miami-Dade County, and Marjorie Rodriguez in Monroe. To all of you, thank you so much for everything that you do. Thank you for being here today. I know that you're prepping for school because the new term is about to start. So enjoy the rest of this before the kids return. Have a wonderful, wonderful school year.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And I do want to come back to, you know, we heard from many more of you on our Facebook page. You can find us there. Holly Thompson Doherty says, I just retired after 19 years. I could have waited till 67 for a better pension, but I was so stressed it was affecting my health. All the stuff that comes along with the actual teaching is exhausting. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. Let us know your thoughts about the teaching profession. Well, that's Sundial for this Thursday, August 8th. Sundial is produced by Chris Remington and Alejandra Martinez. Our intern is Sherilyn Cabrera. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontado is our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Jason Zapka. And the man pushing the buttons today, Peter J. Meritz. Coming up next week on Sundial, rare songbirds traveling across the globe regularly stop in Miami's tropical forest on their journey. Here, they're regularly captured by hunters and sold for a large profit in the black market. A National Geographic investigation into the hunt for the songbird. Plus, our Sundial Book Club author for August, Kristen Arnett, we'll talk to her as well. And finally, the new film Peanut Butter Falcon stars Shia LaBeouf and local actor Zachary Gottsagen. It tells the story of a young man with Down syndrome on an adventure to get to a wrestling camp in Florida. All of that coming up next week. Find us at WLRN Sundial online. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a great Friday, a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
You're gonna love right now. Okay.